How's that?
Can you hear me? Okay. That'll be edited out for the warehouse, Dave, please. Good morning. The question is, what would you do if you came here this morning to either the live site or the warehouse, and somebody got up front and said, we're glad you're here, but here's the new rules. For the next 30 days, anybody who recognizes God, anybody who prays or reads their Bible or meets with other Christians or talks about God in public will be arrested and executed. You're fine to be here today. You're okay to be where you are today. But for the next 30 days, from now until the end of August, there will be no recognition of God anywhere. And if that happens, you'll be arrested, and the penalty is conviction. And the penalty is that you'll be executed, and there's really no way to change these rules. Don't expect to win on appeal. What would you do? You know, some of us probably would go, I'm going to keep doing the stuff I'm doing, but I'm going to make sure I do it privately. Or would say, I can go 30 days without it. That'll be no different than any other time. Or we'll say, I don't know what to do. What would you do if for the next 30 days it was illegal to do anything publicly, anything that is seen by anyone in public that indicates a relationship with God on threat of being executed? Well, the guy we're going to talk about today lived that 2,600 years ago. His name is Daniel, and we're going to talk about Daniel's story. We're in a series called Faith Book. We've talked about Samson. We've talked about Noah. Today we're going to talk about Daniel. Familiar, maybe, biblical friends. If you grew up going to church, you probably heard these stories. I didn't. So almost all the biblical stories were new to me when I became a follower of Jesus, and I kind of learned them that way. But Daniel, let me tell you a little bit. Look up the book of Daniel. If you have a Bible, if not, both here at the live site and at the warehouse, we'll go ahead and hand out Bibles, because I'm going to want you to follow through, and I would encourage you to use the table contents at the beginning of your Bible to find it, because Daniel is about a little over halfway through the Bible. A little bit more if you have an entire Bible. While you're looking it up, go ahead and look it up, Daniel. I'll give you a little background on where Daniel is. The Old Testament is about 4/5 of the Bible, if you have a whole Bible and you just do by number of pages. The Old Testament is the story, really, of God's interaction with his people, the people who lived in Israel. And it kind of shows how God interacted with them, has the whole story. And then the New Testament, of course, is the story of Jesus. So everything in the Old Testament is before Jesus came. And the Old Testament really is divided up into several sections. The first 5 books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, are kind of the very beginnings, and they have a lot of the stories that we're familiar with. They have the story of Adam and Eve, of Noah, then we get into the story of Moses and all that. So we have that whole big story, and then we have a bunch of historical books, which Judges and 1st and 2nd Chronicles and 1st and 2nd Kings. When we talked about Samson, that was in the book of Judges. That's the story of, they're kind of historical stories about God's interaction with Israel as they go and they end up wanting a king. Has David is in that section. And then there's a section that we call poetry and wisdom books, which is Psalms, Proverbs, Song of Solomon, all those that are poetry and wisdom. And then we go into the last section where Daniel is, which is the prophets. And there are major prophets and minor prophets is how it's divided. It's not on how good they are, but on how long they wrote. So like the Stephen Kings of the prophetic world who wrote really long books are major prophets because they wrote like 60 chapter books. The guys who wrote short and USA Today stories, they are the minor prophets. So Daniel is the first of the minor prophets. Hopefully by now you found Daniel. You find Daniel? Warehouse, you find Daniel? Live site? Let me tell you, we're going to start in chapter 5 of Daniel. So the last verse of chapter 5 of Daniel, verse 31, and read through the Daniel story. This is the story of Daniel that if you're familiar with Daniel, you're probably familiar with this. And we're going to look at this, and then we're going to go back and look at his life up to this point. Verse 31 of chapter 5 says, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. We'll explain what that means. There's a new king in town. It says, it pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule through the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. So Daniel's one of the top three people in the entire kingdom. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him up over the entire kingdom. So Daniel is in a position to become the number one assistant to the king. At this, the administrators and satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. Daniel was so good they couldn't find anything. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict to enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. So they come to Darius and say, make this a law, because they're trying to get rid of Daniel. The only area they know they can get rid of Daniel is in his relationship with God. So make it a law so that no one can pray or worship anyone else. And they sucked up to the king while they did it. Okay, so now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. He's in a foreign country. He's in Babylon at this point. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Didn't you publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. I've said it, that's the rules, and I can't change it." Then they said to the king, "Well, Daniel, one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed, and he was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. So the king had not recognized the consequences of what he was going to do. He didn't connect the dots and realize what was going on, so all of a sudden he's like, "Oh, no, that's Daniel. He's my number one advisor. But I can't change the laws." Then the men went as a group to the king and said, "Remember that according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. So Daniel's in there with a bunch of lions. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with a ring of the nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Nothing can change it. He's in there. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried down to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" That's where we start the story of Daniel. And this is going to be, today it's going to be like, you know those movies where they show the end, and then you spend the next 2 hours seeing how they got up to that point, where at the end of the movie you forgot that they already showed you the ending, and you're kind of retracing it. That's what we're going to do today with Daniel. I want to leave us hanging right there. Daniel has listened to this rule and said, "I'm going to obey God. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing." The king reluctantly has him thrown into the lion's den. The king doesn't sleep during the night, comes back, and then says, "Daniel, has God saved you?" How'd Daniel get here? Well, let's start with Daniel's story up to this point. At the story of the lion's den, Daniel's an old man. Daniel is probably, well, no offense, just in case I say he's an old man and I say an age, that there's somebody in the room that's that age. Daniel is probably at least in his 70s. He's been around for a long time. Now, the story of Daniel begins back in chapter 1. Daniel was part of a group from Judah. Israel had split into two countries, and they had both disobeyed God, and the people of Judah had been conquered by the Babylonians. Nebuchadnezzar is the king of the Babylonians, and he had brought, his policy was, it was a smart policy. What Nebuchadnezzar did was, as he invaded countries, he wouldn't just subjugate them and make them work as slaves for him. He would do that, but he would also take their best and brightest of their young men, the nobility, bring them to Babylon, and then train them. Give them good food, physical fitness, put them to school, and use them to help build his kingdom. He would take the best of everyone's young men and make them part of his group. And Judah, they got taken over by the Babylonians, they get brought in, and now Daniel's part of this elite group of guys. And the story begins with Daniel is here. He's in Babylon. He's just recently been taken away from his homeland, and they're starting to train him, and they're at this huge buffet. Now, he's about 16, probably, and he's at this buffet that's got all kinds of food. I don't know if you have ever been with a young man at a buffet. Now, you know, the buffets usually have the thing where they charge. You know, a lot of them have for kids, it's $1 for every year you are, up to, you know, 12 or whatever, and then it's like $13.99 after that. Now, if I ran a buffet, I would do that, but I would say, then once you reach that age, if you're a teenage girl, it's like 75 cents per year you are as you go through. If you're a teenage boy, it's like $5 for every year you are. So if you're 15, you know, it's $75 for a 15-year-old boy to eat. Because, and so Daniel is at this buffet with the great food that's all over the place. He's with his friends, they're giving him food. The issue was, though, that as someone who was raised by the Jewish law, there were some foods that Daniel was being served that he knew was against their dietary laws. And what's he supposed to do? Look at verse 8. This was Daniel's reaction. Verse 8, but Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. He's been brought, his friends are eating, they're getting pizza and chicken and desserts, and then maybe salad if they have some room left at the end, but he goes and he asks, can I not defile myself this way? We're going to look at some of the characteristics of Daniel that led him to be the guy that would defy the law and continue to worship God despite the fact that he was threatened with death. And the very first thing, this is in your blanks, Daniel stuck to his principles. Daniel stuck to his principles. He did what he knew was right. Now, how many of us would do that? Here's what I suspect most of us, me included, would do. We would maybe go, okay, listen, I'm in Babylon. They're in charge of me. They're paying for my, you know, all my schooling and everything, and they've taken us over. I might as well adapt to their culture, and I love that meat that they're serving or that stuff, that, you know, whatever it is. I love pizza, and even though pizza, you know, I don't know exactly what they were serving him. Or maybe if we were pretty good, we might go, okay, I'm just going to eat less than everybody else. God knows that I recognize what I'm doing. Or maybe if we're really good, we would say, I'm not going to eat it, but I'm not going to make a big deal about it. I'm going to fake that I'm eating it because I don't want to cause a problem for the other people. But Daniel didn't. Daniel said, is it all right? He didn't make demands, but he said, is it all right if I don't eat that? And so I can follow what God wants us to do. Let's see what happens. Look over in chapter 1 again in your Bibles, Daniel 1, chapter 12. This is what Daniel said. He said, please test your servants for 10 days. Because I always wonder, like, what did Daniel's friends think of this? Oh, man, shut up. I was just getting ready to get ice cream. He said to the guard whom so he's talking to the guard. He says, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. Because before he was like nervous, this guard was like, well, but what if you look terrible and the king's going to do it? So Daniel says, no, test us for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took their choice food and wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead, I'm sure much to the pleasure of all the other young men. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief priest presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. So this time of training was done. The king comes, they get presented to him. The king talked with them and found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. So Daniel stood for his principles in a country where that was a totally foreign concept. And God rewarded him. Now, that's not always going to happen. But the question is, the point is, Daniel prepared for the lion's den by decades earlier sticking to the principles that he knew were right in a way that he maybe could have wiggled his way out of it. And if we're going to be like Daniel, the question is there an area that God's talking to you about sticking to your principles? That maybe you can kind of slide, you can get by and go, well, that's not the culture of where it is. It's where I work, everybody does this. Everybody talks bad about the boss. Everybody gossips. I'm dating and everybody does whatever they want to do. Nobody sticks to the biblical principles of it. I'm in a marriage and nobody I know treats their marriage partner with honor. Or everybody I know spends all kinds of time surfing porno on the internet. Or everybody I know does this. Or what? Is there an area that God is talking to you about sticking to your principles in? Because Daniel stuck to his principles, and that prepared him for the lion's den way down the line. As we look at the life of Daniel, the first thing that we see is that Daniel stuck to his principles. He was aware of what... And Daniel didn't just do that because that's who he was. We can't just go, well, it was easy for him because that's who he was. It works both ways. Daniel did that because that's who he was, but also that's who he was because that's what he did. As he made decisions through life, it shaped his character and led him to that. So we see Daniel. So that's Daniel, the 16-year-old, sticking to his principles. The story of Daniel continues. We go down the road a little bit. It's a few years later, and King Nebuchadnezzar is in charge. Obviously, Daniel has met him. Daniel begins to rise up, and King Nebuchadnezzar has a bunch of magicians and enchanters, his kind of wise men in his culture. In Babylon, they're the ones who would make decisions. And Nebuchadnezzar starts having these dreams, and he's like, man, these are freaky, and I don't know what it means. And he calls them in and says, all right, I'm having these dreams. I need somebody to interpret. And they say, okay, tell us what the dreams are, and we'll interpret them. And he says, no, you guys are so smart. Tell me what the dream is, then interpret it. Now, you think you have a bad boss, a tough boss? Imagine your boss, like the top person in your organization, calling you in and saying, I'm having problems with something. And you think, you want me to help? Okay, well, I'll do my best. No, I want you to tell me what I'm troubled about, and then tell me what the solution is. And then here's what Nebuchadnezzar did. If you guys don't, I'm going to have you all killed. You know, so, okay, I have a problem. I'm struggling with our business in this area. I can't figure out what to do. You tell me what I'm thinking about, what the solution is, or I'll fire you and then have you killed. Okay, that's the solution. That's the situation they're in. So, of course, these magicians and enchanters who were kind of hoping, well, I can probably interpret a dream. If he kind of gives me some hints, I can give him something. They're lost. They can't do anything. Daniel, we see the next characteristic of Daniel. Daniel, we saw already that Daniel stuck to his principles. We see the next thing, and this is the next blank. Daniel stepped out in faith. Check out what Daniel says. Verse 16 of chapter 2. Daniel first says, they're going to kill us? They're going to kill all of us? Verse 16, he says, at this Daniel went to the king and asked for time that he might interpret the dream for him. So he goes to the king and says, give me some time, I'll interpret it for you. And then look at what he does in 17. He did what we probably would do in that situation. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends. He urged them to plead for mercy from God of heaven concerning this mystery so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So he says, I can do it. I believe God can do it. And then he goes home and he says, guys, we got to pray because I told the king I could interpret it. Let's ask God to give that so we won't be killed. But he stepped out on faith first. He said, God, listen, Nebuchadnezzar, I think God can tell me the answer to this. Daniel stepped out on faith. And here's what happened. Summarize it so we don't have to read 30 consecutive verses. God reveals it to him. He goes to Nebuchadnezzar and says, okay, here's what your dream is. It's this kind of weird Nebuchadnezzar didn't necessarily dream like us, you know, where it's like, well, in my dream, I was back in high school, and I forgot my clothes, and it was the last day, and I hadn't gone to classes, and then somebody from my office was there and was asking me about the project I was working on, and blah, blah, blah. Nebuchadnezzar's dreams that we know of were, like, highly symbolic. So Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, here's what you dreamt, and it's this whole vision of this huge statue, this guy, whatever, and that's made out of different things, and then he says, and Nebuchadnezzar's like, yes, that's what I dreamt. What does it mean? And Daniel tells him there'll be this kingdom that will follow, your kingdom will be big, and it'll be followed by this. And ultimately, the interpretation of it ends with what we know, what we consider to be modern-day prophecy or future prophecy about the eternal kingdom of God. But the key to the Daniel story is Daniel stepped out on faith and asked God, God, without your help, I cannot interpret this dream. I need your help. And God helped Daniel do it. He stepped out on faith and was rewarded for it. And look at chapter 2, start with verse 46. He interprets it, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and presented that an order that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of God and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all of its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, his three friends, that's their Babylonian names, administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained in the royal court. God rewarded Daniel for taking a step on faith. So where are you willing to take a step on faith? You know, we grow spiritually when we take steps on faith. When we go and we do things like Daniel did, where we go, God, if you don't do this, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I think of times in my life when Carrie and I moved to Fairfield, and we didn't know anybody in Solano County, and we moved on a job that paid peanuts, and now the point isn't so much like, oh, God was leading us to do that, but that was a point where we went, God, we need your help. We don't have savings. We just got married. We don't have anything, and we need to do it. For us, another time was when we jumped off the abyss and decided to adopt our kids and thought, we don't have that money, but we're committing to it, and we're going to do it, and we're going to open ourselves up to everybody telling us every made-for-TV movie nightmare adoption story they've ever heard. But once we kind of jumped in, sometimes we take a step of faith when we go, I'm going to go ahead and obey God and do this thing. I feel like there's this thing I'm going to be doing. And we step up. When we take a step of faith is when we do something that we go, God, if you don't help me do this, I don't know how it can work. And that's how we grow spiritually. Daniel did that when he said, God, when he went to Nebuchadnezzar and said, I can interpret that dream. And then went, God, you have to help me interpret the dream. So where's God talking to you about that? Maybe it could be something at New Life. It could be God's talking to me about stepping up in a ministry area. Or it could be something in your professional life or your personal life. God's talking to me about doing this thing where I need his help. Or maybe God's talking to me about sharing his story with somebody that I love that doesn't know him. Or God's encouraging me to try to start giving financially. Is God talking to you about stepping out in faith? Because that's where we grow. And Daniel got ready for the lion's den by not only sticking to his principles, but also by stepping out in faith. You know, remember Noah's story last week. Noah built a boat in the desert for 100 years in the desert with people making fun of him. He stepped out, but that forced Noah to go, God, I don't know what's happening, but I'm going to trust you. Daniel got ready for the lion's den by stepping out in faith. And then we go through I'm going to just summarize chapters 3 and 4. Daniel, by the way, is a book of 12 chapters divided right in half. The first six chapters are kind of the biography of Daniel. The last six chapters are the prophecies that God gave Daniel that are still, a lot of the prophecies, both about Jesus and about Jesus' return, come from the book of Daniel. So the first six chapters of Daniel are what we're looking at. Chapters 3 and 4. Chapter 3 is the familiar story to kids, at least, of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where Nebuchadnezzar, who apparently never learns, keeps back going back and forth between everyone worship God to everyone worship my God to everyone worship the real God. He builds this huge statue and orders everyone to worship it, and they refuse to do it, and they say, even if God doesn't, we believe God can rescue us, but even if he doesn't, we're not going to do it. And they get thrown into the fiery furnace, an angel or God or something, there's a fourth person in there with them. They come out, Nebuchadnezzar goes, oh, I was wrong, the real God. And he orders everyone to worship the real God. And then chapter 4, Daniel, it's this kind of strange story where he has another dream and Daniel interprets it for him. And the interpretation Daniel gives him is, listen, here's the deal. You're going to become mentally ill. You're going to live like a wild animal for 7 years. But then you're going to recognize God is real. And Nebuchadnezzar does this. And the historical record, by the way, most ancient kings, most Babylonian kings have this like really polished up record. The record of Nebuchadnezzar indicates there were times when he was not in charge. Which appears to be like probably when he was out eating grass on his hands and knees. So that's 3 and 4. Then the story resumes. Decades have passed. Okay, Daniel came as a 16-year-old, and then he's a young man when he interprets his dream. Decades pass. Nebuchadnezzar's an old man. Then Nebuchadnezzar dies, and his son takes over. Belshazzar is his name. His son takes over, and it's a totally different thing. Daniel loses his authority. He becomes just a cubicle guy in the bureaucracy of the Babylonians. He's been there for decades. Faithful to God, but he's going back down. He's the guy that people go, didn't you used to be? Yeah, well, I was, you know. Now I'm in charge of just this little thing. And he's down, and Belshazzar is with all his friends. He's the new generation's coming, and he decides, I'm going to have the party of the year. And he has this massive party, and they're eating stuff and drinking, and there's girls there, and there's music, and it's going crazy, and they're just, you know, his friends are going wild. Right, so they're going and the music's playing and Earth, Wind, and Fire, and they're doing whatever, because that's an ancient band. So they're going wild, right? And they're going, and all of a sudden Belshazzar goes, remember, oh man, check this out. This will be awesome. This is fun, but here's a way to turn it up another notch. Remember my dad invaded Israel. Invaded Judah, went into their temple, and they got some cool goblets. Let's go get those goblets and drink out of them. So they go get them, they get the goblets, and they start toasting to their king, their gods. You know, woo, and the music's playing, and they're everybody's dancing, and they're toasting to their gods. And then chapter 5, verse 5, suddenly the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. That's a good way to kill a buzz from a party. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his knees knocked together and his legs gave way. So they're having this big party, and all of a sudden, a disembodied hand appears and starts writing stuff on the wall, and they freak out. He doesn't know what to do. This new king is like, what? We were just having a good time, and that was going on. I got those goblets, and then I don't know what happened. What's going on? And he doesn't know, but his mother, Nebuchadnezzar's wife, says, well, your dad, there was a guy that used to interpret dreams for your dad. He is down on the second floor in his cubicle. But if you go get him, I wonder if he will be able to help. Belshazzar has been very sobered by this. He's been king for a while. We don't know how long he's been king, but he doesn't know who Daniel is. But she says, go get Daniel, and he can interpret it for you. Daniel comes up, look at verse 17 of chapter 5. King says, hey, if you do this, I will do whatever you want. I will honor you, I'll give you good stuff. And Daniel, verse 17, Daniel answers the king, you may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. I don't want your stuff. God has given me this ability. This is God's ability, not mine. Keep your stuff, but I'll tell you what it says. Third thing we see about Daniel's life is Daniel spoke the truth. Because Daniel says, I will interpret, and then over the next several verses, and remember, he's talking to the young king who has no real history with him, other than Daniel is the old guy that helped his dad back in the old days when his dad didn't know what he was doing and threw terrible parties, played Sinatra music. So he's like, man, I'm so much cooler than my dad, but if you'll help. So Daniel comes in, and Daniel over the subsequent verses says, listen, you have fallen short of your dad. Your dad was up and down, but your dad ultimately recognized that God is real, that my God is real, and he honored my God. You've done a terrible job running this nation. You have disobeyed God. And then check out verses 25 and 26. He says, okay, now I'm going to tell you what this inscription means. This is the inscription that was written. Meeny, tekel, parson. This is what the words mean. Meeny, God, he says, first word, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Second word, you've been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Third word, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. You blew it, you're done, your kingdom is going to be gone. Now, despite the Daniel spoke the truth, right? It would have been easy to go, well, I think, I'd kind of like to move back up, and what do you want to hear, or whatever. But Daniel followed his lifelong example and spoke the truth. And it was uncomfortable. But verse 28 or 29, Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple, a gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Daniel stuck to his principles and he spoke the truth. And the question is there an area in your life that you need to speak the truth to somebody? This one is the hardest one for me because I want to be everybody's friend. So it's uncomfortable sometimes. And this doesn't mean, notice Daniel's life, he didn't go around spouting his opinions unasked. He, when asked, he told the truth. When challenged, he stuck to his principles. When a situation presented itself, he stepped out on faith. He had been living there for decades. And we see these things, but he spoke the truth. Is there somebody in your life that you need to just really speak the truth to? Somebody in a small group that you're in that you need to go, you know what, and speak it lovingly. What you're doing is wrong and you're messing up. Or somebody who that you love, that's close to you, that you need to speak the truth. Or maybe a work or neighborhood or situation where you need to go, this is wrong what we're doing. I need to speak the truth. Daniel prepared for the lion's den by speaking the truth when it was clear, and he spoke the truth about it. And so you see, going to verse 30, that very night Belshazzar, the king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. That prophecy was immediately fulfilled. And Daniel, then that leads us into where we started today. So then time passes, Daniel moves up, he becomes more and more, Darius recognizes his administrative abilities, he moves up, he gets better and better, and then this whole thing happens where they go, let's get rid of Daniel, man. What can we do? Well, he's too good. He's honest. He does a good job. But his faith is where we can trip him up, and we can do it. And that's where we see the final characteristics of Daniel. Because check out chapter 6, verse 10. Because the next thing that we see, let me give you the blank verse. Daniel stayed grounded in God. Daniel stayed grounded in God. Because look at verse 10. We read this already. He hears about the decree, says, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God just as he had done before. Just as he had done before. For decades, probably 55 years by this time, every day, three times a day, Daniel practiced his faith, came in, bowed down, prayed to God, stayed connected to God. Temple doesn't exist back in Jerusalem. People are scattered all over the place. They're in exile. He doesn't know if or when he's going back. But every day, just as he had always done, he did it. Daniel obeyed God in the small things, continued to stay connected with him. And the question is, how are you hourly, regularly, daily staying connected to God? Spending time just connecting with God, maybe with your Bible, with prayer, being connected in a small group, connecting with a God who loves you. Daniel was able to do all these things because all along the way he stayed connected to God. He could stand for his principles. He could step out on faith. He could speak the truth because he stayed connected to God. Because the truth is, if we don't obey God on little things, we're not going to obey him on big things. And Daniel obeyed God on both. So we jump forward to verse 19. So the king, remember, we'd left off, the king going, man, Daniel, I hope you're okay. Actually, verse 21. Daniel answered, so Daniel's in the lion's den. Daniel, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lion. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done anything wrong before you, O king. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he trusted his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den. So they had, you know, the kings of this time liked action. So if they were, you know, if the guy that was thrown into the lion's den didn't get killed, the people who accused him did. And they, along with their wives and children, and before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed their bones. And then Darius writes this thing saying, we're going to all worship God. So Daniel, verse 28, so Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Daniel obeyed God even when it wasn't popular, but you see, we see all along the way. And the question is, if we want to be like Daniel, are we willing to do the stuff that Daniel did along the way? And I just want to encourage you to do in this point. In a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Darren at the warehouse. But obey God. We can start obeying God today. We don't have don't think, I wish I would have done it when I was 16 and in my 20s and in my 40s or whatever. No matter what you are, I mean, if you're 16, you can do the 16, but most of us can't. But start obeying God. Now, Daniel obeyed God as a young man in dealing with food. He stepped out on faith and obeyed God and trusted God to interpret the dream a couple times. Daniel continued to step out on faith and speak the truth when it needed to be. And then, ultimately, it was not a difficult choice for him to say, I'm going to just pray like I have always done. So, is there an area of your life that God's calling you to stick to your principles, to step out on faith, to speak the truth? Is God maybe just calling you to stay connected to him? I want to encourage you to be like Daniel and take that step and realize that obedience to God is worth it. One of the ways that you can do it, I want to encourage you on this last thing, is if you have not taken the New Beginnings class, in a couple weeks, next Sunday, it's going to start at the warehouse at 3 o'clock. It's on the back of your card. That's a great way to show you how to connect to God regularly. And you can mark that and do it now. But I just want to encourage you, obey God and realize that God has the best for you. But Daniel was able to prosper in that lion's den because he had obeyed God all along and he continued to do it. So let me turn it over to Darren at the warehouse, and here at the live site, we will go ahead and finish up by just committing to God in those areas. Is there one of those areas that you're thinking, you know what, I need to do that. I need to speak the truth to this person in my life. I need to stay connected with God regularly, and I'm not. And I know if I came up in a situation, again, it's not about jumping over and looking for places where I can speak the truth. You know, oh man, I can't wait to get to work on Monday now. I got some truth I need to speak. Daniel spoke the truth when he was asked to speak the truth. Daniel stepped out on faith when God presented with an opportunity to do that. He stood up for his principles when his principles, the important principles, were being denied. And all along the way, he stayed connected to God. So let's pray.